Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com. Hello, my name's Josephine Pembroke, and this is Gorgeous Gossip. Hello, Donna.
Hello, Josephine.
How are you?
Very, very well.
Oh, I'm very pleased to hear about that. I've fallen off a wagon 3 times.
What did I say?
Not very badly, though. Just 2 glasses of wine yesterday, 2 mini glasses on Thursday, and 2 glasses of champagne. Anyway, we'll talk about that later.
All I'm going to say is I told you so.
Okay, all right. No.
See?
In fact, no is what I talk about, because my son, who's 15, had something happened to him on Friday, and he was socially excluded from the group.
Oh.
And there was a party happening, and everyone fibbed to him, and he found out the next day, and it was, you know, picking up the pieces was hard.
Aww.
But I was wondering whether, as an adult, whether it's happened to you, and whether it's happened to you when you were a young person, and what do you remember about it?
Oh, those school days. But yeah, I definitely was excluded. Oh, you had to bring it up. I'm going to be all depressed. But I remember Amy Gisondo and Wendy calling me up to tell me that they were having a sleepover party and I was not invited.
And were they your best friends?
Prior to that phone call, yes.
So they ganged up against you.
Yeah, I mean, which was, you know, why'd you have to go the extra mile just to tell me?
Mm-hmm. But it is unusual to be so assertive.
Yeah.
You think they'd do it behind your back.
Yes, exactly. Well, and the most awful thing about it was there was only one phone in the house, and it was like right next to my mother's bed upon which she sat all the time. So I was like standing.
Always in public.
Yeah, like next to my mother, but also not wanting her to really know. I mean, I don't know if I somehow imagined, you know, that she would also like think poorly of me. Although in my mother's weird world, being socially unacceptable was more acceptable at home.
Yeah, exactly. So was she quite a socially unacceptable person?
Just socially awkward. How about you? Enough about me.
Okay. I found that when I lived in, I used to live in Dorset in a village, and you were only popular as to how big your house was.
Ah.
Nothing to do with your personality. It was how big. So everyone wanted to be friends with Jenny, who lived in the big house. So it was always like, I'm going round to Jenny's, or have you been invited to Jenny's dinner party? And it was really like something out of Jane Austen, Map and Lucia, you know, I lived in a village and everyone had to drive through my village to go to the big house. So you'd suddenly see a load of 4x4s going past. You think, oh, there's an event going on. I'm probably not going. So it was all about building insecurity. Mm. It was so awful. But then I found out with age, I just think people are more aware of status. I think it actually comes more important with age.
But don't you find that there are things that
to some people.
Well, but there are things that you invite certain people to and things that you don't invite. You know, that one's not going to get along with that one, or that's not going to be a good mix with this, or we had them over recently and we know those people.
Or they're daytime friends. You know, you have friends which are schoolgate friends which you'd never have for dinner.
I generally try to make it a rule to like not mind if I'm not invited somewhere. Yeah. Like I don't really care. And if I wanted to go, I'd go, you know.
Yes.
But
it is
hurtful. I mean, we are social beasts.
What happened to me at school was, because I was probably a bit annoying at times, the whole school didn't talk to me for 2 weeks. Not one person in the school would talk to me. Yeah.
And
I was like going around saying, hello, you know, what's wrong? You know, but just everyone would turn away.
Do I exist?
Everyone. It was torturous, actually. I still don't know what it was.
Well, in turn, have you ever excluded anyone?
Well, I remember being such a trendy, and I lived in Soho, and I was, you know, about sort of 19, and there were certain people I wouldn't talk to because I wouldn't be seen talking to them.
They were just too embarrassing. And you were just too cool.
Yeah, it's just so, it's really horrible now, because now I'm friends of everyone. And I was
anyone
just,
who will have
anyone,
you.
Anyone, be my friend. My weekday fix, darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous. You'll never guess where I went last week.
Where?
I went to a long lost aunt's 80th birthday.
Ah.
And I'd never met her before.
Wow. But where have they been hiding, you or her?
Well, my dad, who didn't bring me up, so I kind of didn't really know his side of a family. And he said, look, I've got this cousin who lives in London and she's having an 80th and I want you to come. So he came down and stayed last week and he took me to this house. She opened the door and I nearly burst into tears because she was a splitting image of my granny.
Wow. Yeah.
And everyone in there, I went up to them and said, I'm a relation of yours. I'm a relation of yours. And they were like, yes. But they weren't as excited as I was. But it was just so amazing to meet a room full of people that were my flesh and blood.
Wow.
And the only person that wasn't a relation was this very, very attractive blonde woman sitting like on a throne in the corner. I said to her, oh, hello, are you a relation of mine? She said, no, I'm not. And I said, how do you know, Aunt, Great Aunt Annie? And she said, oh, because I went to drama school with her. I said, wow. She went to drama school? They were four sisters and my granny was one of four sisters and apparently they're really strong personalities. And I thought, this is radio gorgeous.
Fantastic.
You know?
Our very own Mitford sisters.
Yeah, exactly. And this woman who was sitting there, she said, I said, oh, so were you an actress today? Yes, I was in Carry On. I was in, I know she was in lots of different things, but she was in lots of theatre. And she said, but obviously now my son Ben is so doing so well. And I said, oh, your son Ben, who's that? Benedict Cumberbatch.
Ben.
I said, oh,
Ben.
I said, wow. So we talked about, you know, Oscar nominations. She said, oh, well, the thing is, Eddie and Ben are such good friends. It's going to be terrible for them, you know.
Oh, they'll get over it.
I'm sure they will. You know? She said, but the thing is, I really want Ben to have a boy.
Ah.
And I said, why? And she said, because the name Cumberbatch, he's the last one in the long line.
Oh.
We had a psychic on this week. You can listen to the podcast. And we asked her whether Benedict would have a girl.
Yes.
And she said yes. So I'm sorry if you're listening, Mrs. Cumberbatch, but I've, you know, she's just going to have another one. I know she's 36 and you're worried about it. That was one of the things she was worried about.
Oh, right.
36 is young nowadays, Mrs. Cumberbatch, so don't you worry.
Tell Ben to get to work.
Exactly. Ben, stop rubbing your Oscars and start
Turn
rubbing.
Turn to your fiancé.
Exactly. Start rubbing your fiancé. So, darling, who's the guest on Gorgeous Gossip today?
We're going to continue our theatre theme. We talked to two women from the production of Out of the Cage at the Park Theatre, Millie Finch and Lindsay Fraser.
Just tell me quickly about Out of the Cage. What's it about?
The Munitionettes, who were female munition workers in East London during World War I.
I love it. Let's listen now.
I have joined Lindsay Fraser and Millie Finch in their rehearsals for Out of the Cage, written by Alex McSweeney.
The play's inspired by munition women in the First World War. So it follows a group of women who are campaigning for equal rights and better pay, better working conditions with the men.
What gives these women are fighting for equal rights? What's their experience? Why are they, during this tense time, when their husbands are away, everyone's mucking in, it's wartime. What were conditions? Why were they so awful that they... Well, obviously it blew up, so...
Yeah.
That was one clue.
I think the basic thing was that the women would get paid less than the men, even with the same work. So that was kind of one thing that they were fighting for. My character, Carrie, almost feels quite liberated, actually, by the fact that she's working. And for the first time ever, she's got some money and she's got her independence. But equally, you know, they weren't getting the same pay, and that was their right, and they should have done so.
And they were also, because a lot of people generally in society were quite against women working, being out of the home, out of the kitchen. Every character, although they all agree with the unfairness, everyone's got a very different motivation of why they decide that yes, we should have equal pay for equal work. So you come from very, very different kind of a different stance, and there's lots of conflict with the women as well, because it was the first time when the different classes were actually working together as well. Mm-hmm. So you've got the upper class women working alongside people who would have been their scullery maids as well, so there's a lot of tension there.
And the big worry as well was what was going to happen when the men came back. Does that mean that the women then just go back to their cleaning And that was something that a lot of the women really didn't want, but were quite aware that that, you know, was probably what would happen.
Mm. So that this was their moment of freedom. This was, if there was going to be any moment to seize any kind of power, equality, anything, this was it.
RadioGorgeous.com.
And obviously there's the, you know, with the centenary of the war, it has relevance and resonance for us. But what other relevance would you say it had today?
Well, I think, I mean, at the moment there's a huge amount, I mean, I think everywhere actually, about feminism and equal equality for women, particularly in the workplace. And there's a lot of discussion about that, particularly in theatre at the moment, and that there aren't enough women parts, and perhaps more crucially, what the parts are that are available to women. You know, there's an awful lot when you get scripts and it's the girlfriend or the wife or
the victim.
The victim. And it's very, very rare to come across a play about women, for women, eight characters, really well-rounded, three-dimensional, all the different things there. I mean, they're amazing to play.
Oh, and I also think, you know, that general idea of, you know, bad economic times, you're not allowed to complain.
Absolutely, yeah. You're all in it together.
Yeah. You're supposed to suck it up.
Yeah, you know, some David Cameron actually sucking up a lot more than others.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that sort of putting a light on that feels very limitatory. And I think that is one of those inherent tensions that, you know, could you stop making a noise now? You know what I mean? Come on, we're busy. We have a war. It's like, yeah, but do we deserve to die too? Mm. You know, and that is basically what the government was telling these women, like, yeah, whatever, just suck it up.
Absolutely. And I think still now we're used to being less visible than men, but there it really was. There really is, you know, the kind of the moving into people who are just saying we would like to be treated equally with men now are now feminazis.
Yeah.
No, we're asking for the same. We're not wanting to destroy anything else for anyone.
Well, I think it's an interesting moment in time as well that these women had a breather in terms of there weren't men at home. So they weren't getting this message of shut the fuck up all the time. They were just getting it at work. One, they got out of the house and there were a group of them, not just, you know, over the back fence going to the loo. You know, it was all of them together.
Absolutely.
And then coming home and not have, you know, just mucking in for themselves or for their children, but not, you know, not having those voices telling them to be quiet. It was like, wait a minute, you know.
And I think that has, like, at any point, that can be really, really difficult. Within a home, no matter how fantastic a relationship you have, there is always some kind of power struggle.
And garbage has to be taken out, and kids have to be clothed, fed, and taken to school.
And
if someone's getting paid more, well, guess who's going to do it, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is, the thing that really struck me was the fact that they were talking about equal pay for equal work. And I thought that actually hadn't been mentioned until the 70s.
Yeah.
And, you know, women,
they didn't have the vote and they were still saying, could we get paid?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it takes a while and we need to carry on. There's a lot to be done.
Yes, well, and like anything else, anything that we think is really, really modern started as an idea radically a long time ago.
Absolutely, yeah. And sometimes it disappears for a little while or it takes a different form. But, yeah, the fight takes a long time.
And although we've moved a long way since then, we absolutely have. There is still further to go. And I think that's the thing that, you know, we just sometimes need to remind everyone that we still got a bit further to push.
Mm-hmm. And also that whatever happens in the Western world or in England or in London, it isn't a, you know, international thing. Women are in a position actually far worse than these munition workers in other places in the world.
Yeah.
So
we've got to fan the flames.
Oh, absolutely.
Fly the flag, fan the flames.
Absolutely, yeah.
Excellent.
Radio Gorgeous. Listen anywhere, anytime.
Lindsay, tell me about the production itself.
Okay. Yeah, so I am producing it as well. I sort of fell into producing a while ago, kind of by accident, and now I do both. I act and produce. And so I've known Alex, the writer and director, for quite a while, and he came to me with this script, originally just to be in it, and I said, this is brilliant. I'd really actually like to produce it as well. So we did a development of the show at the Rose Theatre in Kingston in the summer, and then I thought, well, I'll see if I can get a kind of full run and do it properly. Pulled the team together, and now it's happening at Park.
See, and there you go. Female producer, I likes it.
Yeah, well, I think that was kind of a big... the big reason why I started doing it, really, was just I didn't want to hang around and wait for the phone to ring. It is really nice being able to take a bit of control over your career, and that's what you can do when you produce. It's kind of very, very rewarding and fulfilling to take something from scratch and then make it happen, which is actually so different from acting, because acting, you're kind of focusing on your role, your little role in that massive machine, and producing's looking at it all.
Is it kind of a relief then coming to acting?
Yeah, I mean, I love acting's lovely, and sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish I could just not produce, not worry about any of the other things.
What is that like, switching that on and off?
Most of the time it's okay.
Yeah,
but there are moments, and actually I was told off today by Simon, our movement director, because he mentioned he wanted some prop, and kind of producer head turned on and went, where are we going to get that prop? And I started kind of going into producer mode, and he was like, Lindsay, you're acting. But most of the time, because actually they're so different, they're like opposite ends of the scale. So actually, it's I think it would be much harder to switch, say, between directing and acting. But they're so different, you can kind of switch. But,
just get used to never having a lunch break as well.
Yeah,
never having a lunch break is something I've noticed for Lindsay. It's like, right, okay, there's a moment, quickly put some food in over.
And I have a wonderful associate producer, Robin Keynes, so she's takes some of that weight as well.
Was that something when you were a younger actor that you wanted to get into?
As in producing
or directing or any of the other aspects?
To start with, no, it wasn't, because there was a very different... So it's many, many, many moons ago that I trained and left, and it was almost seen as, oh no, if you're making your own work, then you failed at the industry. And then you count up the amount of parts there are, and that isn't the case. And then I left the industry, had children, got ready to fly out at a different moment. And when I did, it was under the guise of creating and devising my own work. And yeah, it's an entirely different kettle of fish. And it's almost like the acting has become the smallest part of the whole picture, whereas the producing and directing and creating a piece takes a lot more ongoing thought and sleepless nights. It's not just learning your lines and not bumping into the furniture. But now, like with the friends I've got that are leaving training, everyone is very proactive, and there's a lot more devising courses as well, like at Central, and they're told, right, women, if you want a part, create your own pieces, and create your own pieces about women. It isn't just about women's issues, it's about them being a human being. They just happen to be female. So I'm really pleased that has changed in the last 20 years.
Yeah. Excellent. Now tell me, it's going up at the Park Theatre, am I correct, on January 22nd?
Yep, we've got a couple of previews starting on the 20th, but then we officially open on the 22nd and run until the 14th of February.
Fantastic. Good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
Break a lot of legs.
Yep.
All 8 of you. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dowels and Munition Factory. And thank you so much, head munition worker, Donna. Thank you, other head munition worker, Ella. Thank you so much for editing. This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous 2015. Follow us on Twitter @radio_gorgeous. Thank you, darlings. Mwah.